Alaikum ji, good afternoon. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. First of all, thank you, Ashraf Saab, Muayyaftar Saab, IPR, for inviting me, and I want to congratulate you on the report, which I look forward to reading. I've seen this institute grow from day one and been involved very closely, so it's a great moment of privilege for me personally as well. I have joined the government after years of working in the academic and think tank space to learn one thing in the 3 months that I've been here. Unless we prioritize, we don't get anything done. That's lesson number one for me, as far as I'm concerned. So what I'm going to speak to you here is about not what will happen tomorrow, because we do a lot of that. What I want to talk to you about and get feedback, and I apologize, I'd have to run right after this for something, but I will get the feedback from IPR if you're so kind. What I'm going to talk to you about is a paradigm shift that we are trying to inject in how we approach the conversation that we've just heard from the speakers before us. My remit is national security, and so I don't deal with the economy per se. I don't deal with the questions of growth. I don't deal with the technical issues around it. But I want to put to you how we are trying to approach this as a whole. And then perhaps later on get your feedback. So the very first thing I'll say to you, I think Yawar Saab has mentioned this, that I may have said in the past, I'm trying to get rid of a lot of what I said because it's not good for me anymore. But geoeconomics and the centrality of geoeconomics in the world. The first misconception I want to remove is that anytime we speak of geoeconomics, of economic diplomacy, of human security, the immediate reaction is, oh, so traditional security is not important. That's not the conversation we can have in this country, given the environment we live in the neighborhood, given what we are seeing around. So the very first point I want to put on the table is that there's no question of any compromise on the hard security aspects of our state. I think I want to put that down as a constant and now talk to you about the fact that this is the first time that a government is looking at economic diplomacy as a paradigm in itself. Not as a competing paradigm to anything, not as a substitute to anything. But the question before us is that what Humayun Sahab has presented, what Yawar Sahab has talked about, many have pointed to before. How do we move to a point where economic diplomacy becomes the front and center of diplomatic outreach? Again, without undermining or substituting anything else. One of the first, in fact, probably the first task the Prime Minister gave me was create an economic diplomacy strategy. As you know, this Prime Minister has spoken about economic diplomacy from the very beginning. The Foreign Minister has talked about it, etc. But what's the change? The first thing to look at is how do we define this concept? We can only get to promoting it after we know what the framework is. And the first thing I'll tell you is that economic diplomacy for a country like Pakistan is not traditional diplomacy plus export growth. That's not economic diplomacy. These are two things that we do every day. If we want to come up with a paradigm focused on economic diplomacy, we are talking of normal, usual, typical diplomacy, political in nature, of course. We're talking of exports, we're talking of trade in services, we're talking of tourism, we're talking of culture, we're talking of agriculture. The entire ambit needs to be looked at as an opportunity for economic growth, and from that, economic security. So the first challenge I've taken upon myself is that within this year, we as a country should have a functional economic diplomacy strategy, which not only defines what it is, but creates a coordination mechanism, looks at the avenues of the world where we still have openings. Africa is a continent that's under utilized, served, or focused. And the Foreign Office and the Commerce Ministry are making a big effort to open up to Africa. That's one area. There are others that traditionally have not been approached in the economic diplomacy sphere. This is the crucial part. Now, a lot of people also, including to me, say, you know, we make policy after policy, what happens? The bottom line is that if we do not create a paradigm based on a new concept, we'll keep talking about what we've talked about because there's no implementation mechanism attached to it. So I'll tell you one thing which is interesting, to me at least. When I started talking to people about economic diplomacy, most of the relevant institutions responded by saying, what do I have to do with this? This is the Foreign Office, Commerce, X, Y. So the shift we need is really to start looking at this as a whole paradigm in itself, not competing, not substituting. And therein, all of what we've discussed just now will naturally, seamlessly fit in. But under an umbrella that has a goal, that has a vision, a goal, and an implementation mechanism. The second thing I want to point to you, which completes this paradigm, is the concept of national security. You know, I lived in the academic world for a number of years. One of the critiques that Pakistan got was very traditionally security heavy. We look at things in a traditional context, Cold War mindset, etc. You can read my articles, I used to say some of these things. The thing to internalize as a national discourse, and I say this as an academic more than a government official, is that I do not find a single Pakistani official, civil, military, federal, provincial, who has any disagreement with the fact that national security is human security plus economic security plus traditional security. In that order. There's absolutely nobody who I've found who disagrees with this idea. The question is, how do we implement the measures that we think of as national security? And there, I think the proof is in the pudding. I'm standing before you, hired by the state of Pakistan to do a job on national security. I'm neither a politician nor a military man, a pure professional technocrat. No political family, no military family. Why would the state of Pakistan make this decision? Why would I be mandated and tasked to become the policy hub for input on these issues? And why would I be given a vision by the Prime Minister, which is approved by the Cabinet, that the fundamental core is securing the average citizen of Pakistan out on the street? I personally cannot think of any other reason than complete commitment to the fact that we have to move in the direction that I just explained to you. The centrality of human security is not lost on anybody. The centrality of economic diplomacy is not lost on anybody. And I'm actually very openly telling you right here that I had a different view before I joined government. Is very much there. Now, what's the issue? In the neighborhood that we live in, how do you seamlessly move in a direction that everybody here is talking about when you look at what is happening on the eastern and western border of Pakistan? I mean, there are people here with 40, 50 years of experience in diplomacy, in civil service. I ask everyone, how does one move to that? See what is happening in India. Look at the unilateral nature of business that's taking place. Look at what is going on within the society. Look at what Afghanistan has done in terms of the war. The war in Afghanistan is done to this region and the fallout on Pakistan. And look at where the Middle East is going. How does one actually stop worrying about the day-to-day of security? This is a real question. I'm not making a conservative, liberal, left-right argument. This is a challenge for policymakers that we are dealing with every single day. And let me just say two things on this, and I promise to disappear after that. One, I think there is genuine introspection needed in the global community. The world in itself is moving from one chaos to another. And those with the luxury of thinking, influencing, and changing the course of global politics are conveniently looking the other way. I'm sorry, I have to put this very bluntly. But what we have seen after August 5th on our eastern border, if that is not enough to wake up the world, I'm not sure what is. I am not the one putting pictures of one of the world's largest country's leaders with Adolf Hitler. I'm not the one. Nor is anybody in this country doing that. It's the front page of Western press and media. So what are we supposed to do about that? If we are going to keep looking the other way, the world is going to keep descending into conflict, whatever sugar coating we want to put on that. And to expect a country like Pakistan, in the midst of this, in the region that we are, to seamlessly just look the other way and say, well, it is what it is not possible. And the final point I want to make is an optimistic note, because I don't want to leave without doing that. Why is CPEC so important for Pakistan? There's a lot of conversation. I lived in Washington for years. Tons of conversation about, oh, actually this is security in the guise of economics. And now this will happen and that base will come up and this happened in this country and that country. Where is that? Because the only conversation I have heard in the system is how to get X power plant in place and that project implemented on time, where we are lacking, where we are doing well, how do we bring that together? That's the only conversation I'm hearing. The ambassador will speak after me if he has a different view, we'll hear. But the focus 24/7 is on how to get the economic projects put in to get to where Humayun Sahab and Yavar Sahab are talking about, i.e. sustained growth. How do we get there? So if I in my portfolio am not hearing the word security, I'm not sure who else would be hearing it. Why is CPEC so important? Precisely because the vision behind it is Pakistan getting to sustained growth, China and Pakistan engaging in a strategic economic relationship, which is much broader than what most people give it credit for, and ultimately making this a project of technology transfer that gives Pakistan that sustained leverage space, etc. in the economy. Now, when you are doing something like this, when you have $50-60 billion in the mix in such a short time, of course there are going to be issues. Nobody is talking about perfect capacity. Nobody is talking about the fact that everything, you know, will happen exactly how it's envisioned. Of course, this is the first time the people of China and the people of Pakistan are engaging on a daily basis. So there's a learning curve there. But every single time there is an issue that arises, that is neither the end of CPEC nor the world ending, nor, to be honest, those who don't want to see CPEC succeed, winning. It is fundamentally an issue which will come up as we go on, and we'll solve that. But the commitment to CPEC at this point, I think, is unwavering on the Pakistani side. I'm sure it is the same on the Chinese side. The goal, to my mind, is fundamentally economic, sustained economic growth and economic security. And that's where I started. And let me end with that. CPEC on its own is a silo. Another project or initiative on its own is a silo. If you have an umbrella conceptual framework and paradigm under which you are doing all of this, you will immediately start seeing more and more synergies. You will immediately see that the sum of the parts becomes greater than the whole. And that's the vision where economic diplomacy comes in and the broader definition of security comes in. And CPEC to me is both the guiding light and the litmus test for that. Thank you very much.